TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Hello, welcome in. Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham, Dean Moore, recording at Target Center. Looking at an empty court, you might be able to hear a vacuum behind us. Is
the court that Andrew Wiggins built.
Yes, it was Andrew Wiggins' tonight here. It's Sunday night as we're recording this, probably Monday morning by the time you're listening to it. But Andrew Wiggins had himself a fourth quarter. I don't want to say had himself a night because the rest of his game wasn't necessarily very good. But the fourth quarter was kind of the stuff that legends are made of, Dane.
Legends are made. Wow. I mean, credit where it's due.
Absolutely.
He took it over. I was saying it. I mean, you and I have been covering this team for a similar amount of time. It reminded me of the Derrick Rose 50-point game.
Sure.
One in the sense that you saw the way all their teammates, you know, mobbed him on the floor, and were just, you know, just happy for a guy who has, I don't know, overcome some sort of adversity in their own way to, you know, to find some success. But also it was just like when D. Rose went off and when Andrew went off tonight, it was because they were playing well. They absolutely took the game over. And that Rose game against Utah, they lose without Derrick Rose, obviously. And tonight, the Wolves lose without Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah.
The Heat were rolling.
He played really – this was a fun game. Regardless of who was going to win or lose at the end, this was a really fun game to watch. The Wolves jumped out to a lead, and they were up by 13, I think, at one point, and Miami played really well. Miami's a really good team. Even without Jimmy Butler, I think that the Wolves did beat a
really
solid
team
tonight. Very well-coached team,
that,
yes.
I think that game goes very different if what do we call Spo, a top three coach in the league? If it's a bottom three coach in the league, I think that is
at least top five.
Right.
I mean, I think you could make – I don't know. I probably have him in my top three, but you can make an argument that
right.
he's outside of number three. But, yeah, he's a really good coach. And
it was informative to me in the adjustments that they made that the Wolves had varying levels of success over the course of the game that I think were largely due to the way that the Heat were defending them versus the way that, you know, they were attacking. I mean, it felt like the opponent's coach impacted this Wolves team. And maybe that's, I don't know, I'm still adjusting to the nature of this whole scheme that is, you know, just inherently a little more ambiguous. Saunders' scheme, it changes or deviates, I guess, over the course of the game. And I think Spo found something with going to Bam, and they really did slow down Cat, who, you know, for at least like 10 minutes showed that he was human for the first time all season.
Yeah, Cat got off to a great start, and then he wasn't, I don't want to call him ineffective the rest of the game, but he wasn't the same guy in the second half that he was the first quarter. The first quarter he had 15 points. I think he finished with only 22 or 23 points.
How did you think of the way that the Wolves used Cat? Because this felt a lot more interior focused. I mean, Cat still had...
He still finished with, I think, 11
threes. He still
threes.
Took 11 threes, but you know what I'm saying? Didn't it feel like that wasn't the primary impetus
for him? It felt like they were trying to force him the ball. Whenever they saw him with a mismatch, which a lot of times it turned out to be Kendrick Nunn was the guy that ended up getting switched on him. They would run the 2-5 or 1-5 or whatever pick and roll it was, and he would end up on Carl, and Carl would head down to the block, and they would try and force him the ball, but the help would get there, and Carl was essentially ineffective, and they could help so well because the Wolves, until Andrew Wiggins caught fire in the fourth quarter, could not buy a shot from outside.
Right, well, that's just kind of the thing. Like, if they're going to decide to walk Cat down in the post, you're going to need to be really decisive about that. It's going to be bang, bang, and then you get it to the post. So he actually has Kendrick Nunn on him when he has the catch instead of
Kelly Olynyk coming over.
Yeah, or then being Bam would get there. And then, you know, Cat's a good one-on-one option on pretty much anyone, but Bam did a heck of a job. You
I
know,
thought Bam was terrific.
Up.
I was surprised that they didn't start right away with Bam on him because they tried to see what Myers Leonard could do on him, and they tried to see what Tyler Hero could do on Andrew Wiggins. And Wiggins had a really good first quarter and then a really bad second and third quarter and then a great fourth quarter.
Yeah, so he missed his first seven threes of the game, right? Or something like that? Six maybe?
I know he missed
he
eight shots in a row.
I think he started 0-for-6. And then made his last four. He finished 4-of-10 from three, but yeah, that's just what we're learning with this team is like there are going to be diminishing returns to what Cat can be if you do not have another player who is either hitting from deep or being able to put pressure on the rim by penetrating. And so far, that's largely only been Andrew Wiggins,
mm-hmm.
who did it in the second half against Brooklyn and overtime, And then he did again tonight. And while I would say all the surrounding pieces have exceeded my expectations so far, I mean, 3-0, of course.
Like, yeah. I did not have this team at 3-0 after three games.
Yeah, definitely not. But they don't have somebody else who can really be that option other than Cat or Wiggins offensively. The other pieces, like Okogie's been great. You know, Roko's been hitting some threes. Layman's like getting the bucket a little bit. But
didn't
it's
not, shoot well tonight, and Travion Graham had a really rough night against.
But it's not in like a
Miami
let's
today.
Give him the ball. We need a bucket,
correct.
Sort of way.
Yeah.
It's like very, very much role player sort of way. Which I think to me, and you know, I'm watching this game and I'm thinking about that, and I'm like, Andrew Wiggins is going to have a massive role on this team.
Yeah, for them to be successful, he has to.
And I guess we always kind of knew that, but I was, you know, with all the talk of the offseason, of making adjustments to scheme and to prioritizing efficiency, there was a reality that I saw where Andrew kind of trickles into much more of a tertiary role mm-hmm. on this team. And now, after three games, I don't think that. I think he is, I think, like Gerson Rosa said at the State Fair, for this team to be successful, we're going to need Andrew to be successful. And I was, at the time when he said that, I was like, are you sure about that? Are you sure about that? We can't find other, you know, make other sort of things come together. But I think that's right. And given the way I'm seeing the system come together, you don't have somebody else who can take people off the dribble, really. No. Teague, I mean, he probably had his best game of the year, kind of. But, you know,
I mean, it's three games. Yes, it was his best game of the year. He's played three of them.
Yeah, with some sort of volume. Like, when they're not just playing with pace and getting up a three or just dashing to the rim, there are going to be a lot of slow down possessions. And it's obviously Cat, option one. Probably 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
But then you go to Wiggins is really the other option there. So they need him to be this.
Well, I think part of the thing when you get into these end of game scenarios, and it was brought up in Ryan's presser after the game, where it's almost always a guard or a wing. It's next to never a big guy that you're running your offense through it in late game situations. And that's why they need Andrew to be able to do what he did tonight, because he's the best option for that. He was, and the reason he had the ball in his hands tonight was because he was the best option for it, and part of that is because he had hit a couple threes in a row, and then when you hit that last three that really seals the game, the ball's in his hands because he was the best option for it tonight, and I think that that's a big step for this team.
I think he's the best option and the only option, and I don't necessarily mean that in a pejorative sense. Him, it's just not the skill set of
sure.
the other guys.
Yeah, well, it's because you would always want it to be your best player as the best option, but because of the position Carl plays, it's a difficult thing to do.
I'm always of the mind, though, that particularly if it's not like the last shot of the game,
mm-hmm.
like the under 24 seconds on the clock, like run your offense.
Sure.
And they can do that. And they have such a diversity of ways in which they can use Towns to get him a bucket or to get him a look in this. Like, we're talking 2 minutes, 1 minute on the clock. Like, go five out.
Mm-hmm.
Go five out. Give Cat a touch. I'll take a Cat step back over pretty much any other option in those sort of situations. Like, you can get that. So for me, I don't know. And how did you feel about the Brook at like the going to Andrew as much as they did in the end of that Brooklyn game? Because I was thinking that at least for, you know, they could have gone in isolation to Cat at least one of those times.
Yeah, especially off of the game that Andrew had, because that was a complicated night. Andrew didn't play well against Brooklyn, but he finished the game strong. He made winning plays down the stretch. And today was kind of a similar thing. I think it was a little less complicated because of how good he was late, where he scored 16 points in the last 6 minutes. That kind of is going to erase some of the bad things that are said about you in quarters two and three because he wasn't good then. But I would have liked to seen the ball in Carl's hands more. At the same token, Carl's the one that hit the three to tie it at 115 that made it go into overtime. So the overtime period was more Andrew than Carl, but Carl was the reason they got there.
It's just going to be this uneven measuring we're going to have to do with Andrew. Because you know who he is. He's not going to be giving you 48 minutes of his best play. That isn't who it is. But the hope is that you're getting 60% of them to be good minutes and 40% of them to be, you know, his below average minutes, whatever. And so it aggregates out into a positive. And that's not what happened last year. There were certainly, I don't know what the percentages was, whatever you want to put it, but it wasn't that in the aggregate, it was a negative.
Yeah.
So I think it's just going to be like a real test of our patience with him to be able to say, what was the whole picture here? You know, what happened for the entirety of the game? I mean, I know I've caught myself, you know, whether it's tweeting in the game or, you know, saying something sitting next to one of you guys during the game where I'm like, oh, man, like that again.
Mm-hmm.
But then I find myself a quarter later, Andrew's put his head down. He's got to the bucket three straight times in a row, and nobody can is getting in the way of that. So
he took an 18-foot pull-up on the right baseline that it clanked off the rim, and, like, there were audible groans from the fans here at Target Center tonight because it was the – you know what? This is the same old story. That's the same number 22. And to his credit, that was the only inefficient shot that he took. If you want to go by the shotting chart that the Wolves have now, that was the only shot that was in a red area. So credit to him for that because the shot selection was good tonight. He just didn't make a lot of them. And then after that, he turned it around and was unbelievable.
And I would say we also got to pump the brakes on the groan a little bit. And I'm saying that to myself as much as anyone else because there are times in the game, if he has one step back mid-range jumper over the course of the game, like, that's not the end of the world.
Well, I think that the groan was also, he took an 18-footer, and it was his eighth consecutive missed shot in a row.
Okay, that's fair.
It was a combination of he hadn't hit a shot since the first quarter, and you just took the shot that everyone can't stand when you take.
Right. The big shot, though, which is just interesting about it, and it is the perfect encapsulation of the, like, yes, this is what you need to do. It was the same move he's made from 18 feet all the time, or 16 feet, whatever, where it's, you know, he's dribbling him at the right and he's sliding back to the left for a, you know, step back.
Yeah.
Sort of, I wouldn't even call it a fadeaway, just a step back jump shot. But now he's just sliding back to, you know, 22 feet or whatever. And it's
the goal.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like the exact same action, the exact same speed. It's you're just putting four more feet of distance onto it. And that is the goal. And that's why it was good to see that happen and that be the result. It was more encouraging than if he makes that shot and it's a two.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you think the adjustment for him is going? Because, like I said, Brooklyn wasn't a great game. Charlotte is – it's tough to take away so many things from Charlotte because I just don't think that they're a very good team. But the Brooklyn game was confusing, I think, is the best way I can put it. And tonight was up and down, certainly, with a pretty low valley, but a really high peak at the end. So it's tough for me to judge how his adjustment's going. And it's something I do think I see it happening, yes.
Yeah, and he's been open about it. And the coach, I mean, the players, they all know. He knows he can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
It's like he's not going to be taking the same shots he
has
was
forever.
Taking forever. Yeah. And so now, like, so if we can assume that, now the next level of the analysis becomes how effective is he in this new scheme, in this new shot selection? Like, it should be better, but if it's just a little bit better, like, you know, he needs to be able to do it at a volume and an efficiency there. Just shooting more threes isn't going to do it. I was looking it up. The past 2 years, in the first three games, he shot 18 total threes and 19 total threes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot, is as many as he's shot now. So it's not.
I think they'd be comfortable with that number now.
Yes. And no, so that's what I'm saying is it's not like Andrew Wiggins has never shot threes before.
Correct.
Like, it's about how effective is he going to be able to do this. It's going to get an inherent boost because it's a, you know, a higher value shot, literally. But that's the next step of the analysis is, okay, now how much is this working? How much is it benefiting the group? Because are they shots that you know, are raising up the entirety of the team? Because so much of what the issue was not just that he's missing these mid-range twos. They were slogs on the vibe of the entire offensive possession.
Everything became so stagnant. And then it essentially sapped the energy from the team.
They were the physical manifestation of the groan.
Yes.
Like,
exactly.
That's
a perfect way to put it.
And then it
saps from the other side of the floor, too. Then you have no energy and your defense is going to suffer after you see another 19-foot jump shot clank off the rim. Like, it over and over and over again, it leads to – it's a destructive habit in more ways than one, I think.
Absolutely. And, yeah, it's just – it's going to be something to continue to monitor. I just know that it's happening and that it's going to be – a huge thing that moves the needle. Just as much as using Cat differently is going to move the needle for this team and for the effectiveness of the group, what Andrew is able to do in his role, because it's a high, it is a high usage, a high volume role.
Yeah.
That part of the equation is not changing.
What have you thought about how Cat's new role has looked? Because this is the first time we've talked really since they've played any games that matter. So
I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah, that's the first word that comes to my mind. Like, and tonight wasn't quite as good as the first two games, but the first two games were two of the best games that he's played in his career.
We were sitting next to each other during the game and we were talking about like what is a bad Cat stat line going to look like? And I feel like this was like kind of a bad
It was certainly his worst one of the year.
But probably it'll fall. The feel of it feels like it's going to fall in the spectrum of a bottom 10% game for Cat, right? Something like that. I don't know.
Like, I would be surprised if he has more than 12 or 13 games worse than this one this year.
And he had 23 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and a block. Like, I mean, still pretty fat. That's a still pretty fat stat line. Like,
yeah. He's going to put up numbers. There's no question about that.
The numbers are there. Like, the numbers are going to be there, and we're going to talk 20 games into the season, and we're going to be like, wow. Because it's going to be fat numbers. It's going to come in a high usage, and it's going to come when teams are adjusting.
Yeah.
To they're like, yeah, that's what we got to stop. And if he can persevere through that, I mean, that's going to be – he's going to put himself in some big conversations.
I think so, too. Especially if this team continues to look successful in a way that I certainly didn't expect them early on. I didn't think that they would look this good early on. I didn't think would be 3-0. I didn't think that they would be as solid defensively as I think they've been. Like, interior defense in tonight wasn't the same as it was the first two nights. But, like, against Brooklyn, I was really impressed with the way that they played at the rim defensively. I think Brooklyn was 20 of 40 at the rim, which is a great number for the Wolves.
It's the execution has been there on a level that you'd probably more expect in midseason form. And I think, you know, we questioned the value or validity of this whole continuity and culture in the summer. And I think the one thing that I can hold to be definitively true is there's value in having these guys come and have been here since September.
Yeah.
They've been playing together for months now. And I think that's what's showing up in the continuity we're seeing. And I think it's something that will only grow. The other side of it is it's going to be, you know, it's kind of like in baseball that your second or third time through the rotation as a pitcher, like they kind of get to know your stuff.
Yeah.
Now, how are the Wolves going to pivot to like, okay, yeah.
There's
like,
tape on us now.
There's tape. Like, we know that they're trying to get all these threes. They know that like Cat's going to, I mean, he shot in 11 the first game, 7 the second game, and now 11, right?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure. So that's 29. He's taken 29 threes. So now if you're a coach, I mean, and he's made 7, 4, and 4 of those,
mm-hmm.
you've got to think
that
a major
adjustment. That has to be the top thing that you want to stop.
Yeah, and so what are you going to – I mean, you're going to go all out to have a guy beat – you're not going to give him that space anymore.
No. Like, you can't afford to.
You can't afford to give – like, Cat, if he's going to shoot him at 40%, even at a higher volume, you can't allow him to do that. So now it's going to be – now that you're going to have somebody in his shorts. So what's the next step? And now is this going to be a Cat off the dribble game? Is he going to have to get to the rim more? Or are you just going to altogether need somebody else to kind of help add something to the group? There's going to be – I don't think it just looks exactly like it has these first three games the entirety of the year.
I agree, and I'm really curious what that adjustment's going to be, because the off-the-dribble option is something that I think would concern me just because of the likelihood of him picking up meaningless offensive fouls that ruin his game. That's how that
turnovers.
Happens. Yes, that and turnovers. That's exactly how that happens. Is if that's the adjustment, I can. I would bet that that's going to happen.
He's not bad at it, but it's far less effective than him just shooting a three or mm-hmm. him just posting up.
Yeah.
Because just shooting a three and posting up, he's going to rarely turn it over.
Well, and it's the same guy that led the league in offensive fouls last year.
Yeah.
Like, that's until proven otherwise, that's going to be a thing in my mind.
To his credit, though, I mean, the fouling discipline has absolutely been there.
Yes.
Through three games. He got to 5 games in Brooklyn, but, like,
it was
there
overtime.
Haven't been the, like, oh, my gosh, fouls, you know, like.
There was one in Brooklyn that I thought was a really dumb foul, and it didn't matter until he picked up his 5th foul. I go, well, if you look back now, that's the one that you really should never have committed. It made no sense for you to take that useless risk that you did.
But if we're at 1 or 2 dumb fouls over 3 games, like...
Oh, that's fine. It's not really a complaint. That's just...
It's still there.
Yeah, it happened.
And it's a product of being a huge person who gets the ball all the time. Like,
yeah.
You're in a situation to be to be fouling more on the offensive end. And then I think the other adjustment that teams are going to do is they're going to try and go at it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to try and go at it. I mean, even in the Brooklyn game, you saw, like, when DeAndre Jordan checked in the game, they just tried to, like, go right inside to him right away. And I think as much as that was about them thinking DeAndre was a good option on the inside, which it might not have been. That's why I think it was.
I don't think it was.
But it was about, I think the motivation was, we're trying to draw fouls on Cat.
Yeah.
And I think, again, it'll be interesting to see each of these different teams.
I think Wednesday will be very interesting when it's Joel Embiid on the other side of the floor, because
game is going to be informative on so many levels.
Bam Adebayo is a very talented player for Miami. He's not Joel Embiid.
Absolutely right.
No one that I mean, Bismack Biyombo does not belong on the same floor as Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, I mean, that is a guy that is still living off of two good games in the 2016 Conference Finals.
Sure.
And Brooklyn, Jared Allen's a fine young player. DeAndre Jordan's not what he once was. They're not in Carl's league right now. But Wednesday, you've got a guy that is arguably better than Carl as a big man right now.
Okay, but, like, I guess Embiid, but Horford's also been one of the best defenders of Cat.
I hadn't even thought of that. But it's true.
I mean, I think I haven't watched a Philly game yet this year. Will before Wednesday, but I would assume they're doing a lot of staggering between Horford and Embiid.
I haven't watched them play yet either, so I can't.
They did in the preseason, or that's what I've heard they were going to be doing. So
I also know
Embiid, both of those,
like,
guys,
Embiid missed their last game as we record this now. He didn't play their last game, so it's just one less. That's
a hell of a defensive option to be able to throw. I mean, Cat's never going to be guarded by somebody that isn't Joel Embiid or Al Horford in that
game.
Oh
no, they are terrifying defensively. And that's why I picked them to win the East, because they're terrifying defensively. Right.
That's going to be the first size test, too. Because we saw Miami tonight, they started two bigs. They started Bam and Leonard.
Myers-Leonard is huge.
Huge. But then they were like, that didn't work. You know?
Well, because they had the wrong alignment defensively. They had the wrong big on Carl early. That's why it didn't work.
Speaking of alignment, that was what Gerson Rosas said all summer, was that we want teams to adjust to us.
Yeah.
And we're going to be small. What the implication there is, then you're going to have to go small to play with us. And that's what Miami did tonight. A team like Philadelphia, they don't have small players. They don't even have that option. So that one's going to be informative. And then so is Milwaukee on Monday.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to have two bigs out there the whole time, too. So beyond the Cat angle, we're going to have to see, all right, like, Covington, like, can you handle this? You're going to need 25 to 30 hard minutes from you, because you're going to have to bang on the inside.
Let's say that Embiid does play on Wednesday night, which I think both of us are certainly hoping happens. How do you think that the Wolves line up defensively? Like, what do you think their assignments are?
I know what I think
one of them for sure would be. Probably two.
Well, the Simmons part is what screws it all up.
Yes, but, like, I think Jeff Teague has to be on Richardson because size, like, just size alone, there's no other option there.
Yeah, I mean,
and even he's undersized there, but it's the best of a bad fit.
So I think you go with quote unquote hide Teague on Richardson,
mm-hmm.
which they tried to do last year with Teague on Redick.
Yeah,
and the first half of that blowout game, Redick went off because they just pinned down.
I don't think they can't do that the same way with Richardson.
But there's different things
Redick
they can do. Like, I think,
sure, but not. It won't be the same exact thing.
And it's a pick your poison. I like to pick. That's the poison I would pick. And then I think you go with Wiggins on Simmons. And, I mean, or I guess if it's Trevion Graham starting. Yeah, I think I would go Wiggins on Simmons, and then you have Trevion Graham on Tobias Harris
and then Cat on Embiid and
Roko
Covington.
On Horford.
Yeah,
I think that's what you got to do. I mean, you can't. We haven't seen that's just. Been,
do you think that they? Do you think they changed the starting lineup this year?
The Wolves
or this for that game? Do you think that's a game maybe they start Vonleh?
I don't think that would be a good idea. In a way, it would be a good idea because you need bigger players, but you haven't played a two big.
They haven't played together.
They haven't
played
two bigs. At any amount of
they've
two
played
bigs.
No minutes together.
Actually, they played Jordan Bell and Gorgie Jang.
No, but like Carl and Noah have played zero minutes together.
Yep, he's been his straight backup. So, like, do I think they're going to struggle with size? Yeah, but now I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how they get bigger. I think it's really relying on Covington, and the opportunity cost of that is if you're playing Covington at the four. And we've seen this. We'll see this not just against Philadelphia. We saw it against Brooklyn. Like, I wanted Covington to guard Kyrie.
Yeah.
I want Covington to guard Kyrie, but if he's the four, he can't.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you, because he's the four, and
because
that's
then not everyone else can slide up another position.
Yeah, I mean, and if you do, you're gonna, and against a team like a team like Philadelphia, you're gonna already put Covington. So Covington is shorter than four players who start for Philadelphia.
Yes.
So then if you're gonna go put him on the one, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's going to be
that's
fascinating.
That's crazy to think about, that he's smaller than four players that start for Philly right now.
A couple of them.
Yeah.
Like, by a lot. So, that I mean, but that is what Philadelphia is. Like, and, you know, if the Wolves struggle with it, it's because this is the style they've chosen, and they don't necessarily have the talent that matches up with it great at this point. And that'll be the case for a ton of different teams. We'll see how much they can punish them. With their speed, to, you know, you got to kind of counteract it in some sort of way, see if they can balance the scales.
Yeah, I'm very curious what it's going to look like on Wednesday. Very, very, very curious to find out what they're going to be able to do and how they're going to be able to defend, how Carl's going to be used offensively, if that's going to change. I do think that living on the 3-point arc, something that he hasn't done as much in the past as he is right now, that probably will, in my opinion, help him against Embiid. If they line up like that, I don't know how they're going to line up. They might
put
Horford
on him. Because then you take in, because that's what the Wolves will do. They'll put Cat out on the perimeter, and they'll say, yeah, okay, you're going to put Embiid out on Cat? Well, then we'll take Embiid away from the rim.
Yeah.
That's super valuable for everyone else on the team. So my guess would be that they do, I don't know, but that's the advantage of the five out. Because then you slide Embiid over to Covington, and Covington's not on the inside either.
Yeah.
So the value of the five out is you take away the rim defender from the group. And that, I mean, that's how the Wolves, because the Wolves are going to get punished on size. They got to punish them back with their positional versatility and their speed and
pace
that they can play with. Like, that's
they have
how
to
they
try
compete.
And run Embiid off the floor.
That's,
and then it becomes a different animal, because Philadelphia is really good with Simmons in transition.
That's like one of those where it's these two teams who in size and shape don't match up at all. That would make for like an awesome playoff series.
It would be wild.
Because they would just, we're getting kicked out. I think it would, it would just be a game of constant adjustments in the chess match.
All right, last thing before we get out of here. Jerk Culver hasn't exactly looked good in any of the first three games. He's been bad.
He's been bad. That doesn't mean he's going to be bad forever, but it's been...
Like, game one, he looked nervous against Brooklyn. Yeah. Then games two and three, he just really hasn't looked all that good.
I think it's probably a serious adjustment to go from being the guy who is super high usage, the ball's going through him every single time, he played point forward at Texas Tech, and now you're in a 16 minutes a game sort of role.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming off the bench, these short sort of stints. I mean, there's a million different adjustments he needs to make as a person to being in the NBA. But just as a basketball role, that's smaller. We're seeing a lot of these other rookies who, whether it's, you know, Kobe White or whatever, they're getting handed a Tyler Hero tonight.
Yeah.
You're starting, you know.
Well, and Kendrick Nunn.
Yeah.
You're starting two rookies.
Right. Go do your thing.
Starting two rookies and two of the best players on the team right now. I think that Miami is going to be a very good team this year.
I think because you can just kind of slide Butler right in to any of those spots.
I could see them getting as high as the 3 seed in the East. I think that they're really good.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's been a whirlwind with the beginning of the Wolves season. I haven't got to watch as much of the other teams in the league. My take of on this podcast where I said the Warriors were locked to make the playoffs.
I feel a lot better about not including them. I don't feel great about the team I had in their place, but I feel better about them not being in there.
You're winning that. That's the only team that I've watched actually a lot.
They got smoked today too.
Yeah.
They can't defend anymore. They look like a mess. I watched their game against the Clippers.
Yeah, I watched that one too.
And it was bad.
Yeah, I mean, with all of this, with every team, you know, long season, they're going to make their adjustments. Every team's going to make their adjustments.
Oh, yeah, they're not going to lose by 30 every night.
Right, exactly.
And the Wolves are not going to win every game.
Well, I think we know both of those things to be a fact. But that, I mean, that's where the coaching element of it comes in, and the being able to, you know, understand that it's 82 games. You got a lot to do, because this 3-0, I mean, it could slide. You go into Philadelphia, which is going to be an extremely difficult game to win.
Tough environment, too.
I mean, Washington's not good.
You should win.
You should, but it's a road game. I'm always hesitant to say anybody.
Bradley Beal can go off at any moment.
Absolutely. Like, it's hard for me to ever say you should win when it's a road game, unless you're when you're just an average team, which the Wolves are average.
Unless you're in Charlotte.
Unless you're in Charlotte, then you should.
If you're in Charlotte, you should win.
You should win that game. But and then you got Milwaukee here. So like 3-0 can become 3-3 really quick.
Yeah.
But it certainly beats the alternative.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I would have said they would be. I don't know. I would have picked 0-3 before I would have picked 3-0. I think. I mean.
I would have too. I mean, I thought that Charlotte was going to be a win for sure because I think they're going to be the worst team in the league. But I didn't necessarily feel confident about them beating Miami tonight. And granted, Jimmy Butler not being a part of it, I think had something to do with it.
Right.
Certainly didn't feel confident about them beating Brooklyn opening night. I thought that was going to be a loss.
I would have been my guess too. And then, yeah, the Philadelphia one we've kind of had penciled in. But so if they are 4-0, I mean, that will be so much higher than what my expectations of this team would have been. And I mean, I'll cop to being wrong and just kind of labeling them.
I mean,
them
if you're copping to being wrong, what do I have to do there? Because I was far more pessimistic than you.
Yeah, I mean, long season. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. I was on the over. I'll take that.
I was not, and it's it's not necessarily looking good. But Dane, thanks for doing this. Get some sleep. It's late. It's Sunday. I want to go to bed too. So that's Dane Moore. You can find him on Twitter at Dane Moore NBA. You can find me on Twitter at Real D Cunningham. We'll have another episode Tuesday, and then probably again Thursday this week with the season starting to pick up. It's going to be a 3-time-a-week show now. So be sure to check that out. Oh yeah, big stuff, Dane. Big stuff at Raised by Wolves. Find us on the Score North mobile app, available for Apple or Android devices. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find us. So be sure to check that out, and we'll talk to you next time.